When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Skims or Allbirds, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and great marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. It's home of Shop Pay, the number one checkout in the world. You can use it to boost conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through to checkout. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Allbirds uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/income.
Hello, this is Dr. Grande. Today, I will analyze the case of Lonnie Paul Tracy. First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Lonnie Paul Tracy was born in 1960 and lived in Santa Clarita, California. This is 33 miles northwest of Los Angeles. There's some confusion with his first name. Court documents indicate his name is Lonnie, but many media reports call him Lenny. Perhaps Lenny was his nickname. It's not really clear. Either way, I will call him Lonnie. After spending some time in the Army, Lonnie became a commercial artist and worked in print advertising. At some point, he married a woman named Sandra, who went by the name Sandy. In 1997, Lonnie was convicted of DUI. In 2002, he was injured at work and started collecting disability. Lonnie and his wife lived in a 1,200-square-foot house at 27965 Calypso Lane in Santa Clarita. In 2003, a man named Tony Davis and his wife Cindy moved into an adjacent house at 27973 Calypso Lane, which sat just to the north of the Tracy family house. Lonnie and Tony were neighbors. At first, it appeared as though the men would get along. Just like Lonnie, Tony had been injured at work. He had been run over by a forklift in 1991 and severely injured one of his legs. Unfortunately, despite sharing an injury history in common, the men found themselves at odds. The conflict started when Lonnie leaned a large tire against the fence in his backyard. The fence started to bend from the weight, which led Tony to be concerned that his dogs would escape his backyard. He put a note on Lonnie's door asking if he could remove the tire. Lonnie had a severe reaction to this seemingly reasonable request. At this point, Lonnie started harassing Tony and his wife and frequently reported minor complaints to city officials. For example, he accused Tony of not pulling his trash cans back from the curb in a timely manner, not parking properly, and leaving dog feces in the backyard. Lonnie also accused Tony of throwing things at him, watching and photographing him, and spraying him with water from a hose. For their part, Tony and Cindy claimed that Lonnie vandalized their property. In 2006, the couple obtained a restraining order against the Tracys. Not long after this, the Tracys obtained a restraining order against them. This did not really do much to slow Lonnie down. He continued harassing the Davises. For instance, he pointed a speaker at their house and played bird noises. He positioned floodlights to shine in their windows at night, and he pointed an infrared light at their security cameras to disable them. In 2011, using skills from his previous career as a commercial artist, Lonnie printed insulting signs targeting Tony and Cindy Davis. He placed these signs in his yard facing the Davis's house so they would be visible if the couple looked over the fence at his property. According to Lonnie, this was the only way he could think of to communicate that watching and photographing him was not normal behavior. The signs featured various statements and images suggesting that Tony and Cindy were obese and disgusting. For example, coming soon, whales of summer, viewing platform and picnic area, and Tony the two-ton blank, starring in the fat, blank, stinking blob that crawled from the swamp. In his front yard, Lonnie installed a wooden barrier, apparently intended to shield his house from view. Looking at this barrier, his neighbors may have thought he was unstable. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. On September 24, 2011, at 2:58 a.m., Sandy Tracy called 911 and reported that a prowler had just been shot. Around this same time, several neighbors of the Tracys also called 911 and reported a shooting. When the police arrived at the Tracy residence, they found 51-year-old Tony Davis on his back on the walkway in front of the house. He was about 15 feet from the door. Tony had been shot once in the chest and once in the back with a shotgun. Several neighbors were around him rendering aid. The scene was chaotic. A few neighbors pointed and yelled at the Tracy house, saying there was a gunman inside. The police approached the front door. Lonnie opened the door about a foot and stuck his head out. He was ordered to show his hands and step outside. Lonnie refused to exit and yelled for the police to come inside. He then closed his front door. The police moved Tony Davis farther away from the Tracy house so it would be safer for paramedics to help him, but Tony did not survive his injuries. Lonnie opened his front door a second time, but again refused to exit and asked the police to come inside. An officer approached the front door. This time Lonnie did not close the door, so the officer entered the house and ordered Lonnie to get on the floor and put his hands on top of his head. Lonnie did not comply and yelled at him to close the front door. His wife Sandy was seated at the kitchen table. She also yelled for the front door to be closed so the cats would not get out. The officer told Lonnie that he may have to use deadly force, which prompted Lonnie to comply. Both Lonnie and Sandy were handcuffed. The police found a shotgun on the couch. It looks like a Mossberg 500 pump-action 12-gauge. Later, an analysis determined that the weapon was used to kill Tony Davis. As other officers arrived on the scene, Lonnie and Sandy continued to be preoccupied with making sure that none of the cats escaped. Lonnie had surveillance cameras on his house. The police found a VHS tape on a chair. The tape had been removed from a VCR connected to surveillance cameras. A VHS tape was a recording medium that stored video on magnetic tape inside a plastic cassette. The machine used to record and play a VHS tape was called a VCR, or video cassette recorder. While primitive by today's standards, these devices represented state-of-the-art home video recording technology in the 1980s and 1990s. The VHS tape contained video from a camera mounted near the front porch. In the video, Tony can be seen approaching the house, then walking out of frame as he moved closer to the front door. He could be seen falling back onto the walkway after being shot. The investigation revealed that Lonnie had fired his shotgun two times from 2 to 4 feet away from Tony. The police attempted to interview Lonnie, but he requested an attorney. Investigators spoke to Tony's wife, Cindy Davis, to get her side of the story. Here is what she said happened on the night Tony was killed. Cindy fell asleep on the couch in the living room while watching television. Sometime before 3 a.m., the light in her refrigerator woke her up. She saw her husband was awake and looking for something to eat. He roamed around for a few minutes before coming over to the couch and telling her he was going next door to tell the Tracys to turn off the infrared light. About 2 minutes later, Cindy heard two gunshots, one right after the other. She ran outside and saw her husband on his back on the walkway in front of the Tracy house. There was blood on his chest. As she went up to her husband, Lonnie opened the front door of his house. He pointed a shotgun at Cindy and told her to get the blank away. Cindy ran back to her house to get a phone and call 911. By this point, neighbors had started to come out of their houses to investigate. 3 days after the shooting, Lonnie was charged with first-degree murder for killing Tony, and he was charged with assault with a firearm for threatening Cindy. Sandy Tracy was never charged with any crime. Lonnie's trial started on October 24, 2012. He testified in his own defense. Here's what he said. On September 23, 2011, the day before the shooting, he went to sleep on the couch in the front room of his house, which was his routine. At about 2:30 a.m., now on September 24, he was awakened by banging and other noises, including mechanical-type noises that he could not identify. He saw some sort of flashlight through his window. He thought it might be from a person coming toward his house. Lonnie yelled for his wife to call the police. He believed the unknown person was a prowler or home invader and was terrified for the safety of himself, his wife, and his cats. At one point, the light from the flashlight came very close to the door, and he heard a voice saying, "Come out, come out." He did not recognize this voice. Lonnie went to his bedroom and retrieved his shotgun after his wife told him the police were not answering the phone. He went to the front room, near the front door, placed the shotgun against a wall, and yelled again for his wife to call 911. At this point, he decided to crack open the front door and make it clear that he was armed. He was going to tell the person that if they were not the police, they needed to leave his property. When Lonnie opened the door, the flashlight came through the crack right in his face, and the door was pushed open with great force. He was knocked backward toward where he had placed the shotgun against the wall. Lonnie retrieved the weapon, saw a large mass in the doorway, and yelled that the person should get on the ground. The mysterious intruder ignored his command and continued moving toward him. Lonnie fired his weapon in the direction of the intruder twice. He had no idea the person he shot was Tony Davis. He did not believe Tony had ever come on his property before. Lonnie's wife, Sandy Tracy, largely corroborated Lonnie's account, although she did not witness the actual shooting. On November 7, 2012, Lonnie Paul Tracy was convicted of first-degree murder and assault with a firearm. On May 10, 2013, he was sentenced to 64 years to life in prison. He will be eligible for parole in 2031 at the age of 71. Realistically, based on how California handles parole, he will never be released. In the end, one man was dead, a neighborhood was terrorized, and another man was in prison for life. It wasn't all bad news for Lonnie, though. At least none of his cats escaped. Sometimes it's important to focus on small victories. The front yard featured a feud finalizing fatality. The family fractured. The future looked fairly frightful. But fortunately, the felines failed to flee. Now moving to my analysis. Lonnie Paul Tracy maintains his innocence, arguing that he acted in self-defense. He claimed that Tony entered his house, so he had no choice but to fire his weapon. The state of California, of course, disagreed, arguing that nothing Tony did justified Lonnie's decision to use lethal force. This brings me to the question, was Lonnie guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence, both for and against the idea that he was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Lonnie and Tony had a long-standing feud. However, the vast majority of the blame rested with Lonnie. He provoked Tony in many different ways, including by using an infrared light to disrupt Tony's security cameras. When Tony approached Lonnie's front door, Lonnie shot him in the chest with a 12-gauge shotgun, and then shot him a second time in the back. Tony ended up on the ground 15 feet from the front door. Lonnie claimed that he opened the door to warn Tony, then Tony forced his way in and continued moving toward him. Lonnie, of course, said he did not know it was Tony at this time. If this was true, there should have been evidence of the shooting inside the house, but there wasn't. Tony's blood and two spent shotgun shells were found outside the front door. When Sandy called 911, she could be heard admonishing Lonnie for shooting Tony, which included saying, "I don't believe you did that." After he was arrested, Lonnie muttered to himself, "This is the first time I've had to discharge a weapon in anger, and I was in the Army." Moving to the exculpatory factors, Tony Davis was no angel. About 3 years before the shooting, he struck his adult daughter and his wife with a car in the front yard of his house. He was charged with two counts of assault with a deadly weapon and one count of battery. Ultimately, he was convicted of making a criminal threat. On the night of the shooting, Tony was technically trespassing on Lonnie's property. Right before being shot, he used a power drill in an apparent effort to disable the infrared light Lonnie had pointed at the security cameras on the Davis house. Furthermore, Tony was on Lonnie's property at about 3 a.m. This is extremely unusual and would make anyone in Lonnie's position fear for their safety. Even if Tony pushed open the front door after Lonnie cracked it open, this would still move the situation closer to a home invasion scenario. Although not introduced at trial, Lonnie was diagnosed with delusional disorder persecutory type. A mental health clinician said the shooting occurred spontaneously as a product of persecutory delusions. When considering all the evidence in this case, do I believe that Lonnie was guilty? Yes, he was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Even if one were to believe that the first shot to the chest was justified, and in my opinion, it was not, there is no way to justify the second shot to the back. What do I think happened in this case? This is just a theory, my opinion. Lonnie Paul Tracy was extremely antagonistic. He may have had delusions as well, but his personality traits are what really led to the problem. He latched on to a complaint that Tony made about a tire leaning against a fence to launch a years-long campaign of harassment. On the night of the shooting, Tony reached his limit as far as the harassment he could endure. He impulsively decided to remove the infrared camera on Lonnie's property. After doing this, he approached Lonnie's front door. Lonnie realized he had a chance to kill Tony and frame it as self-defense, so he shot Tony to death. He lied to the police, claiming he did not realize the man on his property was Tony. The lesson learned in this case is to assume that a participant in a long-standing feud has the possibility of being violent. It is unwise to provoke a neighbor under the false belief that there is a limit to what they will do. Tony handed Lonnie the opportunity he was waiting for, and Lonnie was all too happy to pull the trigger. Those are my thoughts on the case of Lonnie Paul Tracy. Thank you so much for watching. I'll talk to you soon.